The assignment we have for this hour has to do with a glorious church with a question mark at the end of it. I'd like to read you the assignment I was given. Please examine the interaction between the world and the American church over the past several decades. Where has the church successfully weathered the world's attacks, and where has she not, morally, philosophically, etc.? What have been the consequences of her successes or failures? What measures do we need to continue and or begin to take to attain or retain the church's purity? What, if any, are the new challenges or temptations of our generation or age? And how much is really at stake in all of this? I'll answer the last question first. Everything is at stake in all of this. I may not know much else about this topic, but I do know that much. And I'm not precisely certain exactly what to consider here, but I hope that if you have questions or comments as we go along, you'll feel very free to express them. I actually have a class that's different from all the other classes this week. Every other class this week is considering a piece of the Bible. Genesis 10, Hosea, or Hebrews. This class is not about a piece of the Bible, it's about us. And that makes it different in texture, different in tenor. I'm not at all saying that I don't like the assignment or that I wish I had one of the others or anything of that kind. I'm just saying I find this difficult because it's not about a piece of the Bible, but you can help me and I know you will. One scripture that is mentioned is Ephesians 5:27, which I'd like to touch on for just a moment. The Lord wants to present us to himself a glorious church, not having stain or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. We serve a master who said, upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. The Lord has built something that is greater than the sum of its parts. We need to appreciate what the church is and what it is to God. If you listen to a great violinist, what's he doing? Well, I don't know what they make all the pieces of violins out of these days, but we used to say that he's scraping the hair from a horse's tail across the dried guts of a sheep. And yet, listen to that sound. It's greater than the sum of its parts. He creates beauty from it. And I think of the body of Christ as being a great deal like that. Greater than the sum of its parts. The Lord takes you and me, he transforms us by the renewing of our minds, and in so doing, we become a glorious church without the question mark. If we would be presented as a chaste virgin to Christ, we need to examine ourselves, and I think that's what the assignment is that's been given to me, an examination of ourselves. Where have we been? Where are we, and where are we going? President Lincoln said that if we could first know where we are and whether we are tending, we could better judge what to do and how to do it. So this is a self-examination, and I stress the word self there. Let everyone examine himself. We may want to talk about some things that are congregational in nature, but many of the things we need to talk about are personal in nature and must be dealt with at the personal level or at the family level. I am optimistic about the future of the church. I want to make that quite clear. I believe the words of the prophet Daniel from many, many years ago, that in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and shall consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Daniel 2, about the 44th verse or so. The Lord's church is a glorious church, and there is no question mark. He has always had a church on the earth ever since he founded it. He's never been a head without a body, or a king without a kingdom, or a shepherd without a sheep. Many people today, instead of working with the feeble actual church of which they're a part, are dreaming of something like an ideal church. The real church of which they're a part seems to them to be so desperately and wretchedly inadequate that they give it up as hopeless and refuse to work with it at all. But let me caution you that perfectionism is really a hindrance to progress. If we're not careful, the abstract best militates against the concrete good. Much of the devotion to the ideal church of our dreams may really be an escape mechanism which eases our conscience for our failure to work actively for the betterment of the local congregation of which we are a part. My family on both sides have been in the church for quite a long time. I'm blessed in that way, and I feel a heavy responsibility to see that the torch does not fall from my hands before I pass it on to those who are coming after me. Character is formed largely by a sense of belonging. People strive to live up to that of which they feel they are a part. Conscious membership is a powerful stimulus in human behavior. One big reason that little children are able to profit by attending grown-up meetings is the sense of belonging that that brings. They absorb this sense by the process of osmosis. They feel it before they're able to even enunciate it. And eventually it dawns on them gradually that they are a part of something bigger than themselves. Many parents, being a bit ashamed of the narrow-minded churches of their youth, have ended up by giving their children nothing. You and I will never have the church as it ought to be without working with the church as it is. I want to say that again because I think it's really important. We shall never have the church as it ought to be without working with the church as it is. Take what your fathers gave you and build on it. Change it where appropriate, but don't throw it away. Don't destroy it. The church was purchased at the awful cost of blood, and we ought to cherish her and care for her and help her to be a bride suitable for her Lord. This assignment deals with the interaction between the world and the church in America. I doubt that it's necessary for me to try to define the word world. I think it's used in this assignment in the same sense that the Apostle Paul used it in the 12th chapter of the Roman letter, the second verse. Be not conformed to this world. Whatever Paul meant by world in that verse, the assigners of this topic meant by the word world in the assignment. Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. Romans 12:2. He's referring to the spirit of this age. Don't let the world around you squeeze you into its own mold, as J.B. Phillips rendered this, but let God remake you so that your whole attitude of mind is changed. There is a great world system all around us, 24 hours a day. You can feel it and you can hear it, orchestrated by the God of this world. The world system is pervasive and it is relentless. It is seductive and it is deluding. That's why the Apostle John, in writing about it, said, love not the world. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, and he details it, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but of the world. And the world passeth away. It's transitory. It's not going to be here forever. It is a someday going out of existence mass of rancid putridity that's all going to burn. But for right now, it is here while we are here. Some people think it would be wonderful if as soon as we were baptized into Christ, we would be taken away to the next world and not have to live here as strangers and pilgrims. But that's apparently not best because it's not the Lord's plan. The world is here, but it's going to pass away and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. It seems to be desired that I talk about some of the things that I've seen change during my lifetime. I hadn't thought of it, but somebody pointed out to me that I'm the oldest man teaching a daily class either week of this meeting. So that's a change. When I started teaching at these two-week meetings, all the other teachers were old enough to be my father. But that didn't last too many years. Eric Severide said that maturity cannot really pass on its experience to youth. I was downstairs a couple of hours ago trying to do something like that. But it's only possible to a certain extent. Nature has a way of preserving the idealism of youth, which is a good thing. It's the spring of human creativity through some process of trial and error. The young can measure only in one direction, really. They can measure from things as they are to things as they ideally feel that they ought to be. But we who are older have another measurement that we can make, and that's the way that things used to be. Now, all of us are aware that 1955 is not the standard. The Bible is the standard. And yet there are a number of us to whom it seems that in 1955, a lot of things were more biblical than they are now. There is a tendency at times to romanticize the past. It's common to speak of the old timers, our forebears, who rode a horse and an open buggy, or else they walked through snowdrifts 3 feet deep early on Sunday morning to get the furnace stoked up so the meeting house would be bearable in the cold, and then they sat down together and sang, "To the work, to the work!" Whereas today we drive a heated car to a heated meeting house and sit down together and sing, "Hardly a comfort can afford." I've heard you sing it. And I didn't sing it with you because I don't believe it. If you want the brethren to lie, just write it out and put it to music. We'll sing. We'll sing about anything. Well, there is some truth to the idea of the nobility of those in the past. Prosperity creates a mindset sometimes. What old Carl Landis used to call the almighty dollar has altered many an attitude over the time for the worse. On the other hand, the old timers had a lot of problems too. There were a lot of difficulties that were caused by some of the attitudes. And I'm not going to go into that in much detail, but I knew a lot of those people. And, well, one lady put it best maybe a few years ago when she said to me, "We're a lot more civilized now." And there is a considerable amount of truth to that, especially in some places. I think there's a lot of truth to that. So I want to approach this assignment with you in as balanced and fair a way as I can. I don't want to assume that because a thing is old, it's good or bad, or assume because a thing is new, it's good or bad, or any such thing. Rather, let us, as the Lord said, prove all things and hold fast that which is good. All right, that's a little introduction to the topic as I understand it. Does anybody have a question or comment before we begin to get more specific? All right, let's talk about something that I think should be relatively easy for us to talk about at first. Television. A personal issue, but I remember the debate back in the 1950s. I remember it very well. It was an ongoing debate that lasted really for several years about whether we should have television sets in our homes. I think you have to be about as old as I am to remember that debate, and I haven't heard this discussion or much about it for many a year. Today, among us, there are very few homes that don't have at least one television. 40 years ago, the other day, I think it was July the 20th, 1969, I was in my parents' home, and on Sunday evening after a meeting, we invited Tim and Karen Bratcher over to the house so they could see with us men walk on the moon for the first time, because they didn't have a television. At least that's the way I remember the story. They were a young married couple. It was not uncommon not to have a television in those days, not nearly as uncommon as it would be now. In many homes today, it seems that the television is on almost all the time that somebody's awake. And sometimes even after that, the television squawks right on into the night, punctuated by the snores of the brethren. I've stayed in a lot of homes. I know what I'm talking about. And while there is some value to TV, in my opinion, I think there would be little debate among us that much of its content has become increasingly putrid through the years. I don't think anybody questions that. In fact, it's not unusual to hear brethren speak of how awful the content of television is and even detail the many horrible things that they have seen on it. Talking about a certain program, and by the time they're finished, it's obvious that they watched the whole thing to see just how awful it was going to be. Many of our exhortations mutually edificationally speaking, are about what somebody has seen on television. Perhaps this is because out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. There's no question in my mind that television has had in American society as transforming an effect on the culture as the light bulb did after its invention. It was vastly underestimated at the start. Even the man who invented it did not understand what it was going to do. I remember when Hugh Downs, the newsman that you may be familiar with, thought that television was just a gimmick and was going to be a flash in the pan. It wasn't going to amount to anything. Mark Twain had thought the same thing about the telephone in his generation. In 1945, only 8,000 American homes had television sets. Now almost all American homes have at least one. And there is something mesmerizing, there is something hypnotizing about it for a great many people. It has, to some extent, rearranged our lives. It has, to some extent, changed us and changed our society. And I don't even know if we know all the ways that it's changed our society and changed us who are in the church. I don't know, for instance, why it was that congregations years ago in this area used to have a Sunday evening meeting at 8 p.m. I don't know the answer to that, but I know it was true in the area. Almost all the congregations met, if not all of them, met at 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday and 8 p.m. at night. But that has changed. Now, I don't know if that had anything to do with television or not. Maybe it didn't, but I know that 8 p.m. is prime time now, and a lot of people like to be home by then. What should be our stance when it comes to television? This is something I believe that has to be personally determined. I don't think it's anything that we're going to be able to legislate for one another about. But you will stand before God and give an account for the decisions you have made and the actions you have taken in this area. The Lord told us in the Ephesian letter that we ought to redeem the time because the days are evil. We have a mission here, and we ought to take very seriously our time and the mission that we are involved in. And television enters into the use of the discretionary time that we have. So this is a personal thing, but that's not to say it's unimportant. Your solution to it will be personal, but you are accountable for that solution. I don't think we can decide it for each other, but we need to be sure that we do decide it for ourselves and not just by default fall into a pattern of living that we're really numb to, drugged to, and not even aware of. And I say that advisedly because I have seen people for whom I'm quite sure television itself was a drug. They had that look on their face while they were sitting in front of it. What should be our stance on television? My wife and I did not have one for quite a while after we were married. Our students in school, when we were teaching, were amazed that we didn't have it. Sometimes we needed to give them assignments that were from information from the government that had been given to us, assignments that included watching television shows, which we ourselves couldn't watch unless we went to somebody else's house. But they were amazed that we didn't have it. Later, when we did have a television and it broke, we didn't replace it for a couple years or so as we were raising children. We found that that left us out of a certain percentage of conversations, though, that were about things people had seen on television. Eventually, somebody gave us their old one, and we accepted it, and we were more a part of the mainstream again. I have known of couples who have, for instance, kept a television in the garage so that when something they felt was important happened, they could bring it into the house. But yet it was in the garage, so they didn't just feel compelled to turn it on for any little thing. That might be a solution for somebody. Because if there is another 9/11, if there's another Oklahoma City bombing, it's pretty nice to have a television. I think many of us would agree. But perhaps it's the amount of time that some give to this which really bothers me. I find it disturbing. I can see carefully selecting certain programs, turning it on for those, and then turning it off again. But to watch it as a means of procrastinating is a huge time waster at best. Redeeming the time because the days are evil. This is an important verse. We have a mission. So much of our conversation is about what we've seen on television at times that it almost seems to produce a sort of a groupthink, and I find that disturbing. Anybody have any comments about television? Questions or comments? Yes.
My family was one of the families that had it on from morning until sometimes even after we went to bed at night. And I'm really sorry we did that too.
What did it do?
I think it might have been one of the factors that tore my family apart.
Interesting comment. Thank you for that. I appreciate it very much. Any other question or thought pertaining to television? Well, you don't want her to comment, Lisa? Well, yeah. That age child is an emotional X-ray of the home. No doubt about that. Just teasing, although it's true. Lisa, I'm glad you're here. I didn't mean to embarrass you. Neither did your daughter. Be easy on her. Dwayne.
Rick, we just bought a new television.
Congratulations.
About a year and a half ago. It's, you know, one of those flat screens, you know, and it's... there's no such thing as a small one. It was twice the size of our old TV that we'd had for 20 years. We were having a disagreement here, but the the thing that amazes me is it sits in the corner, and when it's off, I look at that thing and I say, you know, it kind of reminds me of a big idol, you know, with an open mouth and things just staring at me in the corner. Yeah. And then we turn it on and it's like it comes alive.
I agree.
And I really question the wisdom, and I think both of us did at the time, the wisdom of really getting it. But that's it.
I appreciate your awareness. Keith.
There's an interesting aspect that many, many things that you may be talking about have that run counter to the culture that Paul wants us to have and instructs us to have in the church. And that is the fact that it inherently isolates us from other human beings. Okay. And there are so few religious groups and so few congregations who truly understand the body of Christ concept and the interconnectedness, that we really have to think very hard about how isolated we want to be from each other.
Thank you. And yes, we will be talking more about isolation. Michael?
We've never purchased a television, but we seem to have some working ones still in our home and have had for many years. For some reason, others think that we need one, so they give them to us.
It happens.
Many years ago, when Lolly was living with us, she would have been the oldest, 5 years older than our Rachel, our oldest child. She was struggling with her grade, so we made a policy in our home, no television, and then later that was extended to no television, video games, computer games, et cetera, Sunday night through Thursday night. And we've kept that rule up through Samuel, who just graduated from high school. And the grades have always been wonderful with the kids, and a lot more time to spend with them, too. It was a good policy.
Thank you, Michael. Tom Dennis, next one I saw.
Without question, we're just dealing with a piece of machinery. The machine itself is not evil. It's the use that it's put to. And without question, we know that there have been some good, wholesome religious teachings, church broadcasts, and so forth over television. But we must be discriminatory as to what we watch if we're going to watch any at all. We know that even the government recognizes the influence that television has, and they've tried to put a limit on tobacco advertisements, liquor advertisements, and so forth. at least in some areas, because it is a persuasive, influential way of advertising. Without question, television has contributed to the spread of profanity. It used to be that some of the profanity that you hear on television, if people would have used that on the street, they would have been arrested.
Sure.
But now then it's on public broadcasting. I turn on public television. We turned on the television just a few days ago. I think a few minutes ahead of a newscast. And there were cartoons on for children with hard profanity in them.
Thank you, Tom. Ann, go ahead. I couldn't tell.
I remember, I'm so old that I remember back when some of this happened when we got radios. And there was a man that came to see my dad, and he thought it wasn't right to have a radio in your house. And the answer that my dad gave him, I thought that's what those buttons were on there for.
There you go.
And that works for television, too.
Good comment. You might want to try a day without television. You might want to try a week without television. Just see how that feels, a week of living your actual life without television. You might want to try rationing. Give yourself so many hours and try to select wisely how to spend those hours of television, then just turn it off. Joseph.
I think it was about 2 years ago, I set a goal to go a month without watching television.
How'd that work out?
It worked out real well until I went to the doctor's office, and I was sitting there waiting before I realized what I was doing. I was watching television. So at least in my home, I went the whole month, but it's hard, you know, if just going through your life to absolutely not watch any television, even for 30 days.
I find that in a car waiting room or a doctor's waiting room, sometimes it's possible to turn it off. If you ask the other people in there, are you watching? Is this your favorite program? Or some question that you can get the right response to and turn it off. But now it seems that I was in a hospital the other day, and it seems like they had it so that there weren't any buttons on there. It was controlled from somewhere else. So I identify with that problem. Carter Hahn. Whoops. Wherever you want to go, Tom. Okay. Leslie.
I just want to know one thing. What about watching sports?
That's an obsession all its own. And one that we should deal with. We should deal with obsessions in general, and that the sports obsession is one possible big deal that can have a great impact on the Christian life. I would say, in moderation, that would be my judgment. But I will, what?
And an impact on marriage.
Yes, it can. Paul said, all things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful unto me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. I know places in this country where certain types of sports are right next to being a religion. And I could tell you stories about Indiana and basketball and all that. But maybe later on that story. Carter next, I think. Carter Hahn, right there.
Comment on whether this could become an addiction or not.
Yes. I was using the word obsession, and I could have interchanged that with an addiction. It certainly can. And if you get addicted to anything, the thing to do is shake it. And if shake it means abstain from it, then I would say that would include even the watching of sports. If you can't seem to not do it, then you probably need to learn not to do it. I think Christina was next on the back row there. Yes.
Do you have, well, for our family, we kind of have decided on one video for the kids per week, which works fine. But what's your advice to a marriage where maybe the husband and wife aren't unified on that? Do you understand what I'm saying? How can she
I'm
still
afraid
honor?
So.
I love my, he's a wonderful husband. And I just think it's kind of downtime he likes. Maybe that's the only time I'll shut up. I don't know. But, you know, how can she still honor, but yet whenever that's his pastime that he enjoys, you know what I'm saying?
I think so. I wasn't getting all the words. I don't know if it's the mic or what, but as I understand the question, and I'll just give my answer to it. I believe that in a marriage, the husband and wife in Christ need to talk, and that's the context of which we're talking here. The husband and wife in Christ need to discuss this between themselves seriously and yes, exactly, prayerfully, taking everything into account. And under that husband's leadership, there needs to be a decision reached. Maybe it will be some kind of a compromise. Out of the tension comes a way to go. And it may not be exactly what either one of you thought was the best, but you influence each other and come up with a way to go. It's very important that we consider this and not just have it running indiscriminately in the home, in any of our homes. Very important that we consider it. And the fact that you're interested enough in it that you are considering it and you know that there's a disagreement about it is a good part of the equation. I would rather err on the side of too little television than too much. We can always add on a little more if we need more. And I can visualize a time when you might watch a lot of television all at once, if there was a national emergency or something. But those times are very rare. And most of the programming is just not really something that is needed. It doesn't contribute to many good things. Commercials are terrible. Now, I don't know. Tom, where are you? Does somebody? Okay, Wendy.
Just a quick comment. Being gone from the States for 3 years, coming back here, I was amazed at the... I think maybe TV is affecting our material products and stores and things. Everything was in immensely brilliant colors. The clothes, the crayons aren't the old Crayolas. Now they're in like neon colors. And I don't know if that's effect of the kids getting tired of seeing what real colors look like and now they need even brighter colors.
I don't know. That's an interesting observation.
And another thing that... a lot of men that we know have made a covenant with their eyes. They refuse to watch something that will lead them astray. I've heard that men learn visual. Men are what do you call the word? They're stimulated visually, and women are stimulated auditorily. For child rearing, women are keyed into child's cries, and men are keyed into seeing things, you know, and TV is certainly probably visually for a man much more of a pitfall than maybe if I hear music. You know, I have to watch how much watch myself and how much music I listen to, or if I'm just listening to the TV as opposed to watching it. And we need to make a covenant before God, I think.
I appreciate that very much. It's an excellent comment. I made a contract with my eyes, said Job, and every man needs to do that. Is Loretta next? I don't know who you got, Tom.
I'll go by you.
Well, there's been lots of hands.
Well, Rick. Rick,
yes.
I'm older than you are.
Thank you.
But when I was growing up, you never heard a preacher in the pulpit say, well, I watched this movie. It was always condemning watching movies.
Yes.
Now, today, it's very common. Hear a preacher get up, oh, I watched this movie last night. Another thing, our country songs today are so trashy. The radio goes off when we hear them come on. And you may intend to bring this up, but the internet is a worship thing today too.
Thank you, Loretta. Yes, you make an excellent point. When I was growing up, it was commonly taught in the church that it was wrong to go to movies. As a matter of fact, I think my father told me, and it's way too late to check with him now, but I think he told me that when he was a young man, he went forward at 26th and Spruce and made public confession that he had gone to see a movie. I'm pretty sure that's what he told me. I was 17 years old before I ever saw a movie, and my parents didn't know it even then. And now, as Loretta points out, we have brethren not only openly recommending movies to one another and sometimes making talks about the movies that they have seen. So there has been a big shift there. I feel like I'm at a handicap in this to a certain extent because I don't understand the attraction of so many movies. I just don't understand it. And I have to be careful about condemning what I don't want to do anyhow, like you've heard the story of the preacher who just got up and lacerated people who would go out and play golf. That's the stupidest thing in the world. He hit a little ball all over the pasture and try to put it in a hole when you could be out fishing somewhere. You know? I don't want to fall into the trap of just condemning things that I don't want to do anyway. It's not going to cost me anything to not do it because I wouldn't have done it anyway. But nevertheless, I am sure that most movies in the theaters in our time are not good for us. Can anybody dispute that? Surely not. So the point stands. Even though I can't see the attraction of it, I have a reason not to like it. And it is a concern. There has been a shift here, and it's not a shift that I like. Nelson, please. He wants you to use that. Go ahead.
The thing that I really miss in my life is my father reading the Bible of an evening and had a prayer every evening when we lived on the farm. And I didn't carry that out with my children. I'm very sorrowful.
Thank you for that confession. I appreciate it. Yes, Alvin Bown, I think, told me one time, and I may get the numbers wrong, but I'm thinking he said that by the time he graduated from high school, he'd been through the Bible something like 11 times. Just, if I understood it, it was included that process that you just described in life on the farm. And there was a time when you mentioned anything in the Bible, and Alvin could immediately find it within just a few pages because he was that familiar with it, just based on that process you described, if I understood him correctly. Tim, I think if you find one in between, Tom, that's fine. Okay.
That's the question. Is I'm afraid that the television has intruded upon the fraternity of the family, the strength of communication, reciprocity of thought, and especially on evangelism. The question I've got for you is, do you feel in your experience that the church has suffered in terms of evangelism? And the sovereignty of the family?
Yes, I think television has contributed to the cocooning effect that keeps people separated from each other. Yes, I do. Ann's got one, too. I do. Thank you, Tim.
I was thinking about what Janice made the remark about it, splitting homes.
That
there's
was back
been
there.
Some homes split over computers also.
Yes.
Because of what their mate may be watching on the computer and their children and causing a lot of problems. And I think anything that you become addicted to, you need to get away from it.
I agree with that. Yes, our young people are some of the ones that I'm the most concerned about. They, in general, seem to have a nearly insatiable appetite for movies that I don't understand. And it's very hard to determine if there's anything at all fit for them to see to satisfy that appetite. So it is an issue, and our homes need to deal with this issue. As far as addictions are concerned, that's a category we should discuss as well. Go ahead, Dennis.
Earlier on, you mentioned the scripture that talks about redeeming the time.
Yes.
There's also something I'm a little bit concerned about that maybe we're doing to a certain extent, and that's looking at the old days and saying they were better than the new days. That just like several have mentioned, and talking about the same problem with the radio, TV, computers, and I'm not disagreeing with anything anybody has said, that this is not something that needs to be dealt with, but again, it's just a machine. The problem is our own engagement with life.
That's right.
Our own perspective towards how we use our time. Are we really engaged with it or not?
Very good. Thank you. And that's what we're talking about. We got Marilyn over here, and then one in the back as well. You see Marilyn? Right there. That Marilyn.
I happened on a pamphlet the other day, or booklet thing that was in my collection of stuff, and I was reading, it was What's Wrong with the Movies and Why We Should Not Go. And a phrase in there caught my mind, and I've kind of been going over and over it. And it said, and this was written in the 1940s, late 40s. It said, when movies were clean and the whole family could go to them, we heard sermons all the time against them of how evil they were. And now that movies are evil and filthy and no very little redeeming qualities to it at all, you never hear a sermon against them. And I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting. Thank you, Marilyn. Yes. I don't know how important it is to get the mic to you, but right back there, Tom.
I just wanted to second what Dennis said and point out that what we're saying is pretty much the exact same thing people said about novels in like the 16th, 17th centuries.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And whether they were right or wrong is another discussion. Prove all things, hold fast that which is good. Make your personal decision about how you're going to live your life. Listen to each other, and that might help you. Who's got it? Hey, Sonia.
I was thinking related to that is just, it's an item that we tend to shut our brains off when we watch it.
That's
and I'm
true.
Guilty of that. That's my, the kids go to bed and I would like to sit and watch TV and zone to relax before I go to bed. But if we're honest with ourselves, we'll realize the programming that's on 99% of the time has a message. And so we just have to be careful because, and it's just getting worse in my opinion, and I'm not very old, so you can't say I'm too much of an old fuddy-duddy.
Nobody
but
would say
it's,
that.
It's homosexuality now.
Yes.
It's amorality. It's parading your body without clothes on. It's even feminism. If you notice all the, we like action shows. How often does the woman save the man? You know, I mean, it's just, it's constant.
The God of this world has an agenda. It's not happening at random. I think Janice has one.
Along those lines, there's disrespect to fathers and husbands.
That's true.
Christians ridiculed. Belief in God, ridicule. My comments on another subject, though. I used to watch a lot more TV. I don't watch much now. I used to go to movies. It's a really rare thing. Like twice in our 20 years of marriage, I think I've been to a movie. And what I realized through that experience was that when I was watching them often, things in them didn't bother me like they should have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some things did, the really out there stuff. and I was a lot more careful about what I watched than most people were.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was away from it for all those years, the first movie we went to, we were taken by my dad after a whole bunch of people at a church meeting talked about this wonderful movie. And I was so sickened by what I saw in it that I just wanted to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I could not believe it. And I realized that what the difference was having that seared conscience that we read about. Things become normal and they don't shock us.
Exactly.
And we need to be shocked more often than we are.
We do get desensitized. That's why I say you might want to try what Joseph did, a month of no TV.
And
cleanse your palate and then see how something affects you. And take it to heart.
The other brief comment I'd like to make is in being careful with what our children watch. We were real careful about what John watched when he was little. He didn't want to watch much anyway, so that was easy. But we thought Winnie the Pooh would be safe. But from Winnie the Pooh, he learned this from Rabbit, raising that fist.
Hmm.
So you have to watch what your children are vulnerable to, and you have to know what they're watching, or they can't. I mean, it's just not fair to expose them to things like that when they're so young and don't know any better than to copy them.
Thank you, Janice. Good comment. Two over here.
Hello, my name is Jenica, and I'm 13 years old. I don't usually do this kind of thing.
What was your name again?
Jenica.
Jenna?
Jenica.
Jenica, thank you.
I'm 13 years old, and we have not had a television for over 2 years. And in the 11 years we did have a television, I never got to know my parents very well. In the 2 years we have not had a television, I have had a stronger relationship with my parents. And it's became very helpful as I'm growing and becoming the woman God wants me to. And I also have some friends who support me in my decisions. And it's very nice to know that I'm not looked down upon. And so I just wanted to let you guys hear that from a child.
Well, that just makes me want to cut the plug off. Thank you. Thank you, Jenica.
Well,
yes, sir.
I am Jenica's dad. And I will admit, when my wife approached me over 2 years ago now that to do a month without the TV, I wasn't very excited about it. But after that month, we decided to not put the TV back in, and we gave our TV away. But it did bring our family closer, and it made me more understanding and willing to do what God wanted me to do as far as leading my family. I will admit that we still watch movies sometimes on the computer, and we probably do that more than we should, but we don't have the constant TV on as we did before, or even just in the evening. And we don't use it to babysit our kids like quite often we would. We thought, well, we need time together so the kids can watch TV and we'll go talk, or, you know, things of that nature. I think it is a great experiment to go a month without it, and then if it goes longer than that, that's good too.
Thank you very much, James. I really appreciate this discussion. Carter, go ahead. You're the oldest man here. Carter is the sharpest 93-year-old man I know. More power to you. Long may you run. What you got to say?
Maybe we need to put an end to this addiction something by watching such programs as Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
You're almost making me wish I'd seen that so I could enjoy the joke more. But I at least know it's a program. Marvin.
Well, so that you won't feel alone, when I was 16 years old, my grandfather, who many of you know, felt that it was wrong to have a television and have that aerial sticking above your house so everybody else would know it was in there. And I told him at the time that I felt like that was just going to be like a radio in a few years. If you didn't want to watch something, you just turn the knob or turn it off or whatever you wanted, just adjust it however, you know. So that's kind of the way I remember it back 50 years ago.
Exactly. Thank you, Marvin. It looks like Ray Wilson.
I don't remember, of course. But weren't the Greek games a problem back then?
They were a problem.
Yeah. When I was a boy, Roy Rogers was my hero. And I have a television. I don't want to give it up. I've seen things on television I would never have gotten to see. And I was right there with the cameraman. And something specific that I've mentioned to you before, and I got to see it again last week on History Channel. It's a series called Underground something or other. And in the city of Naples, Naples has been covered by Mount Vesuvius before, more than once, I suppose. And they found down under Naples the remains of a city that's 2,500 years old, 500 years before Christ down there. And I was down there with the cameraman and explored it. And
there are some good things about it. I think if there weren't, we wouldn't be discussing it. I appreciate that balance.
I will go ahead and explain the mic. It is a noise-canceling mic, so you almost have to eat it. Got to get it right to your mouth. So.
Okay. Don's got something. Right back there.
I don't know exactly how to say this, but I've been taking a lot of notes, and among my notes are the idea that we're talking about a social phenomenon, we're talking about an addiction or a bad habit, we're talking about a cause and effect. Is the television a cause or is it an effect of our social life? We're talking about sin and temptation, and we see that everywhere. We don't just see it on television. We don't just see it in the movies. The kids, when they go to school, see it at school. They see it on the streets. They see it in the shopping centers where they go to shop, and they see it when they're at home with their parents. It's not something that we can avoid by turning off a television. We're talking about morality and morals. We're talking about who determines what's right? What are our standards? Somebody back here mentioned that in the past there was a lot of book burning going on. That didn't stop the immorality that was going on. And we're talking about Christians should be keeping ourselves unspotted from the world. And when it comes to television, that's where we are adults, and our maturity should show in how we regulate our own lives and the examples that we set for our children. If you turn off your television and you continue to lead an immoral life, that television hasn't harmed you at all.
Okay. Thank you, Don. Charles.
One of the things that I think has become even more clear for me is this: as far as our kids, I don't know that it works to tell them, don't go see movies. I think it may work to teach them how to choose them. Because to just make a blanket statement not to go see them, they're probably going to go see what they're missing. But it's more, to me, I would rather choose a movie that I knew what it was going to be like for them to see than to sit and watch a program that I don't know where it's going when it starts.
Okay, thank you. Loretta's got something.
Speaking of movies, there may be some that are good, but we know where that money goes. That they get a royalty off those movies. We know what sinful lives the movie actors and actresses live. So are we helping them to keep on living those lives? If we shut the movies off, we may clean up the world.
Thank you, Loretta. I would like to think that it might be possible to find a good movie, but I don't know if that's even possible. I haven't looked, so maybe it is possible. But I appreciate the point. Okay. Go ahead, Janet.
Well, this may come from the fact that we had a buffet for lunch. But when I kind of think about television, I see both sides of it. Dave and I didn't have one for several years when we were married. And I do agree that for myself personally, I've watched things I shouldn't have, and I spend more time than I probably should watching TV. But it does come down to the idea of moderation, and the buffet part was what I was talking about. We can go to a buffet for food, and there are lots of good choices on there. But sometimes we just want fried chicken and macaroni. And we pick that, even though that's not what's good for us. Usually when you want to pick what's good, you don't go to a buffet because then the temptation is too much. So with TV, it's like a buffet. There's good and bad, but it's so easy to grab that tempting stuff. It's right there for the same price.
Thank you very much, Janet. Blessed is the man who condemneth not himself in that thing which he alloweth. Well, that's, unless there's something, oh, go ahead, Milford. Milford's got something. We've got another minute.
It's all about working out your own salvation with fear and trembling. There's a lot of things we can do if we don't have control on. You realize the average speed limit on the highway, the patrol says it's 79 miles an hour. How many of us hit the average speed? The law doesn't say that. It says 70. So we've got to control ourselves and work out our own salvation.
Thank you. It is a self-control issue. Let each take heed to himself and make your own decisions and the decisions for yourself and your family. And take all this under advisement. It's good to think about this thing. I think tomorrow we should go on from here and talk about a subject that has already been mentioned by a couple of you, and that is the idea of obsession or addiction, with reference possibly to a whole range of things that we can consider together, because I do think here we have another shift. I think we're in a time where there's more of this than there was. It's always existed because the human personality has always been the same. But now we live in a time where it's easier to get into some of these obsessions. And once you do get into them, how in the world do you find a way to get out? So Lord willing, we'll take it up there tomorrow. And I've got, it looks like that. Looks like that says 3:15. Mark.